This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome back to Missing. I am Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I am doing pretty well today, Tim. I'm excited about this episode because we have an old friend on, a colleague in this profession. How are you today?
I am doing great and same. Very excited to let our listeners know that we have Josh Hallmark on this episode. Josh Hallmark, of course, does the show True Crime Bullshit about serial killer Israel Keyes. And it is a fantastic show. And we're also joined by Jennifer Amell, who is our cohort and our coworker on The Missing Show. So there's four of us here today. And we're speaking about the disappearance of Karen Sue Adams.
And Karen Sue Adams disappeared on March 11th of 2007 from Chester, West Virginia. And Josh will go into the exact geography of that. And this is sort of in connection with private investigations for The Missing. However, there's a tie-in to Israel Keyes. We know, like you said, Josh covers Israel Keyes. He is exhaustive in his research on not only the existing known victims, but the potential extra victims that have been alluded to and just haven't been confirmed yet. And this individual, Karen Sue Adams, the more he's looking into it, the more he's seeing connections that he just can't ignore.
Right. It's very interesting to consider the facts. And Josh has done some coverage on Karen Sue Adams' case on his show, True Crime Bullshit. But you mentioned that we're teaming up with Private Investigations for The Missing. And there is an announcement today that that we are teaming up and we are doing a fundraiser for billboards. So you can find that link on PIs for the Missing social pages or on truecrimebullshit.com and click on the fundraising tab.
And the billboards are very important because the area in which Karen Sue Adams disappeared from the casino that she was last seen at to where her phone pinged, you can include three different states as well as the Ohio River. She was from Pennsylvania. The casino was in West Virginia, and right over the river is Ohio. So this is all in the wheelhouse of Israel Keyes. Casino, multiple states, you have a river, a missing car. So these billboards are super important because you need to cover so much travel distance and so many different borders.
And we will be planning a live fundraiser for these billboards and for this case specifically with Josh at some point to raise funds for Private Investigations for the Missing. And make sure to check out all that Private Investigations for the Missing does over there at investigationsforthemissing.org. And you can follow their social pages. There are links in the show notes.
And at the time of her disappearance in 2007, Karen was 54 years old. That would make her 68 today. She is 5'4" to 5'6", about 110 to 120 pounds. She was last seen wearing a green coat, two dark-colored shirts, blue jeans, and a baseball cap. And she drove a red or maroon two-door 2005 Suzuki Firenza, and you can find information on Karen Sue Adams at charlieproject.org and search Karen Sue Adams, or you can go to truecrimebullshit.com. And one more quick bit of news before we get to the interview. If anybody is in town, in Worcester, in Wormtown, on Saturday, November 13th, the show Death by Incarceration, hosted by Suave Gonzalez and Kevin McCracken, that's a show that's on our Crawlspace Media Network, they will be performing live at the Brick Box Theater in Worcester. Tickets are available via the link in the show notes. You can also check them out on their social media. They'll be posting about that with the link to the ticket sales. Their Twitter is DB Incarceration, so they will have that link in their Twitter and on their Instagram. Again, that's Saturday, November 13th, with special guest Nikki Bell from the Lyft organization, right there in the heart of Worcester, Massachusetts.
Welcome back to The Missing Podcast. Josh Hallmark of True Crime Bullshit, how are you today?
I'm okay. How are you?
Doing great. Why are you just okay? You're smiling. You have this this glow about you.
Well, we did just spend, what, like 20 minutes trying to get all this new fandangled equipment of mine to work, and we're now going the old school route of just talking into the computer.
Well, the truth and the information that you possess in regards to the topic today, I would say that no equipment can hold us back.
Perfect. Well, at least we have that.
The facts transcend the microphone
and technology.
And the technology, yes. And Josh, just want to introduce you here on air to Jennifer Amell. I know you met off air recently on a series of Zoom calls we've had, but Jennifer has been working with us on The Missing Show.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, Josh. It's a pleasure to be in a Zoom with you.
Likewise.
Get a room, you two. Don't all things just lead back to Michelle Kazuba when we all get together? Wasn't she sort of the catalyst to something here? I feel like she had a hand in this.
You know, she has her hands in everything. Well, so Karen S. Adams first came on my radar because, as I'm sure your listeners are exhaustively familiar, I cover the Israel Keyes case, and she is one of the names 44, which were 44 people who were missing on Namus that matched to searches or images found on Keyes' computer. And so I started looking into her very casually, I guess, 7 years ago, 6 years ago, whenever I got the files. And at first, I didn't think she could be a victim because she wasn't in an area that we could place Keyes in. She went missing from a casino at the very northern tip of West Virginia, basically across the Ohio from Ohio and just an 8 mile drive from Pennsylvania. And Keyes had never been to West Virginia. As far as we could tell, he had only driven through Ohio and through the tip top of Pennsylvania. But over the years, the more we started looking into Keyes and getting some very credible tips and getting new information from his friends and family, we were able to place him in Pennsylvania and Ohio actually quite a bit. And then we started looking into Keyes's familiarity with gambling and casinos. And once we found out that multiple people in his life said that he was a big gambler, we reevaluated his timeline and started to notice that a lot of the places he was going to repeatedly were gambling cities like New Orleans, Las Vegas, Green River. So those things came into play. And then recently we kind of reevaluated the Namus 44, Keyes' known travels, Keyes' known friends and family who lived across the country, and found that there's actually a route that goes from Keyes' home in Nia Bay to his cabin in upstate New York, Route 30, and the majority of the Namus 44 disappeared within 35 miles of Route 30. Route 30 connects to Route 7, and it's a route we know he took, and that goes to his home in Constable. And Karen Adams disappeared basically at the intersection of Routes 30 and Route 7. So once we had all that, it started to feel much more likely that Karen could be a Keyes victim. And that's where Kaz got her sticky little hands into everything, and decided that we should partner with Private Investigations for the Missing, and see if we can't find a little bit more information about Karen and her disappearance.
And would you say it's characteristic of Keyes to operate on borders between states?
Yes. You know, he told the FBI that an ideal situation would be abducting someone from one state, murdering them in another, and burying them in a third. And it's another reason this area could not be more Keynesian, in that there's three state lines all within a 10-mile stretch.
Right. It seems to create a little bit of jurisdictional confusion among law enforcement. I mean, and that means like nobody knows whose case it is. And if they do have to investigate across state lines, they need to go through all of this red tape with other organizations, which makes it that much harder to piece together these crimes. So I imagine that was definitely in Keyes's mind if he did have something to do with Karen's disappearance.
Yeah, and we found that's the case here. And there are a few other factors. Her car disappeared with her, which Keyes was known for disappearing his victims' cars. The other factor at play here is that the casino at the time Karen disappeared was in the process of getting a license for table games. And they did not want any negative publicity. So they, as far as we've been told, and I reached out to them to give them the opportunity to deny this, and they said no comment, but they basically were stonewalling the investigation. They were tearing down missing persons flyers. It took them 6 months to give surveillance to the police, and when they did, it was heavily edited, and they would not communicate with the press other than saying, we do not believe Karen disappeared from the casino, even though the last sightings of her were walking out the casino doors.
That's really, really interesting and really kind of tragic and sad that that would be the case, just simply for keeping a casino. It's not like you have to turn people away from a casino. Like, people like to gamble. I don't really think that something like that was going to absolutely, you know, destroy their business. But before we go down the rabbit hole, I would like to give some statistics from the Charlie Project about Karen. She was missing since March 11th of 2007. This is in Chester, West Virginia. She was born January 10th, 1953, which would make her 68. She was 54 years old when she disappeared, 5'4" to 5'6", about 110 to 120 pounds. And like you said, she was last seen at the Mountaineer Gaming Resort, and that's also near Chester or in Chester, West Virginia, right off of what highway did you say?
Route 7. And Route 30.
And pretty close to the Ohio River.
Yeah, it's on the Ohio River. You can see it from the casino.
Does that description, does her appearance match what is a type for Keyes?
There's not really a type for Keyes. You know, he said his type was easy to move, so smaller. We have noticed that some of his likely victims and known victims resemble people in his life. I don't know if that's coincidence or confirmation bias, but Karen does look a lot like his mother. And what I have found while we were there is, if Keyes is staking out this casino and he sees someone with out-of-state plates, that's gonna, you know, ring alarm bells for him, because that's gonna be a victim who has already crossed a state line. And so I think Karen's in the casino with Pennsylvania state plates, and she's leaving at 4 a.m. by herself. She's likely the only one in the very dark parking lot at that time, which we know Keyes would stake out parking lots late at night and wait for someone who was an easy target to come.
Before we get into the last movements of Karen, Josh, I'd really like to know What spoke to you about Karen? Why is she so special to you in particular? And do you know anything about her personality, what she was like?
Yeah, so, you know, it's important to me because I think, especially on the heels of Gabby Petito, Karen was not what I call an editorial victim. She was older, she was poor, she had a known gambling problem. So she's someone that you could easily write off as like uninteresting, or she lived a lifestyle that would encourage something bad to happen to her. And so that just like bummed me out as a whole. Anytime I look at a missing persons case where they get no press because they're not editorial, I immediately have an attachment to them. The other thing about her is she worked as a teacher's aide at a school for differently abled and physically challenged people. And that salary was below the poverty line. They were paying her $22,000 a year to do this really selfless work. In fact, they were paying her so little she had to take a second job at a Big Lots. And that all kind of ties in from what I've learned about Karen from her family and from media reports with her gambling problem is she was like looking for a way out. She was not being paid a livable wage, was working a lot at these two jobs, and she, I think, was going to the casino hoping to like make it big and get enough money just so she could reasonably live, which is not a lot to ask, especially considering the work she was doing. So the combination of that, just how like she was part of this machine of the casino and these underpaid and undervalued employees in happening in an impoverished area, you know, it's almost predatory that the casino would go into this area where I think the poverty rate is 12% higher than the national average. And she was just part of this system of like people who didn't care for her. And it's just a real bummer. And the media didn't care. And jurisdictionally, it was a nightmare. And, you know, my perception is, at least in West Virginia, the casino was making the state so much money that even local law enforcement wasn't prioritizing her case because it wasn't in their best interest. So all of those factors make it really devastating, and just learning about Karen, that she was this really lovely person. She was a spitfire and funny and well-loved by her friends and family and in the community, and just like a really good person who was trying to make something of her life, even though the odds were completely against her.
And she was last seen on surveillance at that casino?
Yeah, and that's another thing that comes into play is the night before Karen went missing, for the first time in American history, daylight savings happened in March instead of April. So she actually went missing shortly after the time change. And because of that, no one's clear on what time she actually left the casino, because no one knows, and as far as I've seen, the casino has not shared whether their surveillance cameras have been updated for daylight savings yet. So she either left at 3:01 a.m. or 4:01 a.m. And that comes into play because her phone pinged at 4:35 a.m. in or around Steubenville, Ohio, which is a 25-minute drive from the casino. But it's like, okay, was she missing an hour before her phone pinged, or did she basically leave the casino and her phone traveled directly to Ohio? And unfortunately, because there's no clarity around whether their surveillance had been updated or not, we don't know factually. There's a reason to believe they had not updated the surveillance yet, just because of the timing. And the local law enforcement reported she was last seen at 4:01 a.m. Media and the FBI say 3:01, but I'm inclined to go with local law enforcement since they were working directly with the casino. But yeah, so that's another thing that comes into play, and whether that's intentional or not, I don't know. But if you're someone like Keys, it's a really good time to abduct someone.
And so I imagine you've scoured through hours of this surveillance footage and identified several people in the videos. Anyone look like Keys?
Yeah, totally. You know, the casino was really forthcoming with the footage that they sent out. No, sadly, all that's been made public is a single still of her leaving the casino. And the files, I filed a FOIA request about a year and a half ago, and they responded saying they were working with media who had leads in the case and wanted to know if I had a lead. And so I sent them this, like, two-page document outlining, you know, she was on Keys's computer, which they were not aware of. Keys traveled in the area. Keys was known to go to casinos. And Keys made references to casinos abducting someone from a casino in a suicide letter. And the very next day, they emailed back and said they had reactivated the case based on a new lead, and since the case was active, they were no longer sharing information.
Sounds pretty coincidental. They probably had nothing to do with the findings in your research.
No, I'm sure there was just another really strong lead that came in those 24 hours, too, that was not me.
Right, out of the blue, right. Well, hey, you said she was on Keys's computer. What does that mean for people who don't know what you're talking about there?
So the FBI did a forensic analysis of his computer, and it's a computer he only owned for 2 years when he was arrested. So obviously all the searches, all the files on it occurred within the last 2 years. And they found, I believe, two photos of Karen Adams on the hard drive. It's unclear whether they were saved photos or from just a image search, like he had like clicked on her photos on the internet and it had saved in his cache. That I don't have clarity around, but at a minimum, he had looked at what was likely her missing persons page on the FBI website.
Have you or has law enforcement been able to match a lot of people, like for the crimes that we know Keys has committed, are a lot of those matches to those files he has on the computer?
We've only been able to confirm two, which is the couriers. There is another case where this woman actually did not end up in the name is 44 because Keys had spelled her name wrong. Like they saw him searching this woman by name, but it never linked up to any media about her because he was spelling her name D-E-B-O-R-A-H instead of D-E-B-R-A. So she, who is very likely a victim, in fact, the FBI have ruled her in officially, she would have been on the name as 44 had he known how to spell her name.
Oh, but maybe was there a possibility that he was misspelling her name on purpose because he was trying to elude some sort of like connection to her, like in his search history?
I don't know. I don't think he's that crafty, and I don't know what the utility with that would be because he would still
have to click on the link. It would still be an iteration of her name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Step into the hidden corridors of the past with Hometown History, where every episode uncovers the untold stories and secrets nestled in the streets and alleys of our own backyards. We bring history to life, revealing the extraordinary in the ordinary, from local legends to forgotten tales that shape the communities we know today. Tune into Hometown History and embark on a journey through time, right from where you are. Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch unsolved mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore, and in the throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program.
So, back to Karen. What do you know about that night that she disappeared? What was she doing? Did she work that day? What time did she go to the casino? What was she doing there?
Yeah, so it was a Sunday, and she had gone. She was a big bingo player, and she had gone to a bingo tournament at a different casino. Mountaineer was also, as far as we can tell from their online archives, was also having a bingo tournament that day. And we know that she headed from the previous casino to Mountaineer at around noon. Played bingo for a pretty significant amount of time. She had a few other regulars who saw her. They said she was acting normally. She didn't seem drunk or upset. She was just having fun playing bingo. At around, I want to say, 8 p.m., she moved over to where the slot machines were and played slots all night. At 8, she called her brother to say she was at the casino. He was a little miffed. They lived together. He had issues with her gambling problems, especially because she was living with him and was having financial issues. So he was a little annoyed about that. Again, said she was in good spirits. Few people saw her using the ATM. The last time her ATM card was used was at 2 a.m. and she pulled $60 out of the ATM at the casino, which also kind of lends to the fact that she probably left at 4 and not 3, because $60 on nickel and quarter slots will last you a lot more than an hour, unless you're just like,
really bad luck.
Go and pull happy. yeah, or terrible luck. And then the last outgoing call, like I said, was at 4:35 a.m. Outside of Steubenville is where it pinged, and it went to her voicemail. And we know that with at least two of Keyes's victims, he used their phones to check their voicemails to see if anyone was looking for them and who might be looking for them. And with another victim, Samantha Koenig, he used her phone quite extensively following her abduction, to text her family, to look into where she was supposed to be, who she was communicating with. So using someone's phone is very much part of Keyes's MO.
And the ping at 4:35 was this phone calling its own voicemail?
Yeah.
Was there any indication that she won that night at the casino?
No. And assuming, you know, that she was still pulling money out of the ATM at 2 a.m., probably not. But that's one thing my researchers and I have discussed is, you know, Keyes liked targeting people in conjunction with gaining money. So he used a ransom with one of his victims. He talked about abducting people from ATMs. He talked about doing ransoms with other victims. And so it's not outside the possibility to believe that a casino is not a bad place to stake out, because a lot of people are going to be walking out with cash on hand.
And she was there for a while, huh? At the
casino
that night?
Yeah, I think it was 14 hours she was there.
Wow.
And she had to be at work at around 7:30 a.m. On Monday morning. So she'd never been called out sick, never missed a day of work, never been late. So that also lends to something happening at the casino, because she likely would have left and gone straight home to get ready for work.
Any reports of intoxication at the casino?
No. Everything I've seen and talking to her family, she wasn't a big drinker. And everyone said she just seemed normal and good spirits and totally fine.
And did she indicate to her brother when she would be home?
No.
So the phone call was just to let him know her whereabouts?
Yeah.
And this Steubenville ping on the voicemail, what direction is Steubenville, and would she be traveling in that direction to go home?
She would not. It's in the exact opposite direction she would travel to go home. She lived northeast of the casino, and Steubenville is southwest of the casino. And obviously, you know, phone pings are kind of a science that I know very little about. So it's not impossible that she could have been at the casino or heading northwest from the or northeast of the casino when it pinged there, but there is a cell tower directly across the river from the casino, and considering the time of day, it seems to me, as an uninformed layperson, way more likely that her phone would have pinged at that tower if she was, in fact, heading home at the time.
Gotcha. So either it's her with her own phone heading in a direction for no apparent reason, or it's not her on the phone, and somebody is traveling either in her car, because her car wasn't found at the casino,
right? No, it was never found.
Okay, so the car, she either traveled somewhere, met with somebody, something happened, or, you know, somebody abducted her.
Yeah.
In the parking lot of that casino and got in her car.
Yeah.
Right, those are the two scenarios.
Is also something Keyes would do. He would abduct someone, take their car to a pre-scouted place to commit their murder, then take their car to wherever his car was, or destroy their car.
It certainly checks a lot of boxes for Keyes in this particular case.
That's kind of the thing for me, is like any one of these things isn't like worth, I guess, looking at Keyes, but when you look at all of these components together, it almost reads like an Israel Keyes playbook.
Right, exactly.
When she called her brother, did she use her cell phone to do that, or did she use a payphone?
She used her cell phone.
That was the last outgoing call, other than the last, like, ping?
As far as what has been made available, yes.
When her cell phone pinged, the user of it was checking voicemail. Was there a particular voicemail there that they were trying to listen to, or was it sort of a general check of, do I have messages?
That has not been shared publicly, but I will say people saw her on her phone throughout the night in the casino, so it's not like she was like so invested in bingo or slots that she wasn't answering her phone. So I'm curious, would she have missed a call while she was there? Because it doesn't seem like she was. Which then it's like, well, why does she need to check her voicemail at 4 a.m. when she's driving home?
In your opinion, just based on her financial situation, she was someone who might be looking for a way out, and that's why she was gambling. Do you think that is something that law enforcement has thought of, and they believe that she found her way out? Maybe she won and she left, and that's why there might not be as active of an investigation?
No, and you know, that's a poor choice of words on my part, I guess. Like, she wasn't looking for a way out of her life. She was looking for a way out of her financial situation. And I know that's not... I have not gotten that indication. You know, they told me they reopened the case, and that was a year and a half ago. I talked to her family a few weeks ago, and they had never been informed that her case was reopened. So it seems to me this has never been a priority to them.
Right. And how much coverage of Karen's case are you doing on your new season?
We've done two entire episodes. And I think, you know, this case means a lot to me. And so I am continually looking into it and doing what I can. I've made now 3 trips down to West Virginia. I anticipate there will be more. So depending on what we find, there could be a 3rd episode even this season.
And how is Private Investigations for the Missing going to help you on Karen's case?
I am so appreciative, because what started out as a suggestion of a billboard near the casino has become a little bit bigger than that. So now I think we're going to do billboards north and south of the casino, and it sounds like we're going to be hiring a PI to help us get a little more information. Of course, we would love to crowdfund for this. So as of today, on truecrimebullshit.com, listeners can go donate directly to Private Investigations for the Missing. And that will go right into this campaign of helping support the PI and helping support the billboards.
What do you hope to achieve with the billboards? Awareness, maybe answers, and why the placement of them?
All of the above. You know, for me, she was in that casino for 14 hours. All signs seem to indicate that she was abducted from the casino parking lot, which means someone probably saw something and they just don't know that it's relevant, whether they saw someone out in the parking lot who looked like they didn't belong or shouldn't be there, or they saw someone in the casino eyeing her. It's very likely someone saw either her abductor or saw her walking toward her car. So I think awareness, especially because there was not at the time a significant level of awareness that she disappeared from the area surrounding the casino. And I think just a reminder to say, like, maybe this is not top of mind for local law enforcement, but there are people who care about Karen and they are still looking for her, and we still want answers and we still want information. And those two areas are significant because if, in fact, she was traveling home from the casino, she would be going northbound. And if, in fact, she was abducted and her phone pinged near Steubenville, because that's where she was heading, she would be going southbound. So we can be getting people on both ends. Also, at the time, there was no gambling in Ohio, so a lot of the casino's traffic was coming in from Ohio across the Ohio River.
Is it your opinion that she could have crossed into Ohio, or do you think she stayed in West Virginia?
I think it's possible. You know, if you look at where that cell tower is, what's interesting is within its range is a marina that connects to the Ohio River. There's a landfill, and there's a bunch of abandoned mills and houses. And you know, if it's Keyes, and I try not to look at anything through the lens that Keyes did this, but if it is, we know he utilized boat ramps quite a bit. We know he talked about multiple victims ending up in landfills, so there are a lot of Keyes markers surrounding that specific cell tower. I also think, you know, whether it's Keyes or not, I think it's very likely a stranger abduction. And again, that specific location lends to muddling an investigation by crossing state lines. So that ping, to me, points that someone was trying to get her across the state line, if in fact she had been abducted at that point.
Yeah, and that brings me to the importance of the billboards as well. If you're considering how close these highways are along the state lines and along the Ohio River, and you said, you know, she's most likely abducted in the parking lot. Well, you're putting a billboard in that general vicinity. Perhaps somebody who was working there one night, well, it'll, you know, ring a bell in their head if they see that. That's the same story with anything that's further down towards the Steubenville area. You know, perhaps somebody who was working at the marina or somebody who went into work at, you know, one of like the landfill or something, you know, maybe that will spark something. Maybe somebody who worked at a diner will recall somebody coming in all, you know, dirty, messed up, something, you know, whether it's Keyes or just anybody. So I just think it's important to note like the reasoning for these locations.
And what's important about that marina is it's a high crime area. I was doing some searches and they've had dozens of car thefts between 2007 and now. They've had tons of break-ins. So it's an area where someone who is up to no good would actually blend in and not stand out. And it's also an area where there's no security cameras. People tend to stay away from because it is a dangerous high crime spot. So if you're any abductor trying to disappear a car, it's a great place to either push it into the river or leave it with the keys and know that it's probably going to get stolen pretty quickly.
Interesting. Well, I think it's important to mention here, in case it does jog anybody's memory, that Karen was driving a red or maroon four-door 2005 Suzuki Firenza sedan, and it had a Pennsylvania license plate reading ETD5587. So hopefully people do have a memory of that car that they could call in some kind of tip. They remembered it seeing parked somewhere weird or, you know, anything that would really stick in their mind.
And the likely range that car would have been is between Steubenville and Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, which is just outside of Pittsburgh. So Anywhere along US 30 or US 7 is likely where that car would have been in the immediate aftermath of her departure of the casino.
Are any of those highways toll roads?
Not in that area. There are other toll roads, as far as we're aware, but again, there isn't a lot of transparency. That car was not seen on those toll roads.
And you also said that you spoke to her family. How does that conversation begin? How do you start to reach out to, I guess, her family, but the family of any missing person?
It's truly terrifying. And I always say, you know, there's no right way to reach out to family, but there are a lot of wrong ways to reach out to family. And you can't assume that any one family is going to react the same way. I've had some really lovely experiences. I've had some family who don't want to hear from me. I think her family was at first politely skeptical. You know, they had concerns that I've been researching her case for 6 or 7 years, and this is the first time they're hearing from me. And I just expressed, you know, I don't want to reach out until I have a reason to reach out. And it had gotten to a point where I felt like there was reason to reach out and get more information and let them know, hey, I'm going to be covering your sister or your sister-in-law on the show. If you would like to hear the information I have, I would like to give you the opportunity. So I think after that initial probably 10 minutes of awkwardness, and, you know, they were a little confused and overwhelmed, they were just grateful because they felt like her case had been ignored, and they were happy that someone was looking into it. And so since then, they've been gracious and really lovely and very cooperative is a poor choice of words because that assumes that they're supposed to be, but they've been very encouraging and forthcoming with me.
Are you aware of any dragging of the Ohio River that maybe search for her car in that area around the casino? Because there's nothing saying right now that she wasn't abducted by somebody else and that person sunk the car and then took her in their car, and that's where the cell phone ping happened, just in another car.
Yeah, they've done sonar searches north of the casino, but, and I've exhaustively gone through archival media that's available online, it does not look like they dredged or searched the river south of the casino, and certainly not near Steubenville. The thing, though, is there's basically 9 minutes of time between if she left the casino at 4:01, which is likely, and the ping, minus the drive time to travel from the casino to where her phone pinged, there's only 9 minutes. So it's likely whatever happened to her car happened after the ping. If you go to truecrimebullshit.com and click on fundraising, there will be links to the GoFundMe, and I am hopeful that, you know, we can get a PI on this and we can find some answers. It's been almost 15 years since Karen disappeared, and her family would love to know where she is.
So go to truecrimebullshit.com and donate to this campaign. Private Investigations for the Missing is going to get involved. This is going to be exciting. We'll have updates soon.